A bar can feel like a constant in life, something dependable. So it can be a shock when a familiar tavern suddenly closes its doors for good. In December of 2015, a Pioneer Square bar called the Double Header called Last Call for the last time. The thing that makes this more than just another local business obituary is that the Double Header is the oldest gay bar in America. Or one of the oldest, depending on who you ask. Clint Lanier is the co-author of the book Bucket List Bars, Historic Saloons, Pubs, and Dives of America. He visited the Doubleheader in October of 2015, and when he found out that it had closed just a couple of months later, he was shocked that almost nobody was talking about it. It seemed like hardly anybody had noticed. He talked with sound effect producer Kevin Kniestad about the Doubleheader's place in history and why it deserves to be remembered.
The Doubleheader was named that, from what I understand, because of it, it had two floors. The top floor was a tavern, was the saloon, and that's the floor that you walk into off the street. Underneath that was a casino and a pool hall. The casino and the pool hall was, in the 30s, was, I guess, what you could call the gay bar, in the sense of the gay community there was allowed to dance together. You know, so men could dance with men, women could dance with women, and they could dance close and intimately. This place lasted from 1934 to 2015. We went in October of 2015, and it was really just unrecognized. The significance was unrecognized, and because of that, there wasn't a lot written about it. Instead, they just kind of existed as what you could otherwise say was a dive bar. It was dark. You had really old nicotine-stained wallpaper throughout on the empty spots of the walls that you could see. Other than that, it was covered in bric-a-brac with mementos and beer signs and pictures and paintings and so forth.
What did you learn about the original owner, Joe Bellotti Sr.?
Well, Bellotti Sr. was just accepting. He just accepted people for who they were. So he would pay off the cops for his patrons, which is pretty significant. Another thing was that he didn't overcharge anybody, which was also very significant. There were other places where gay people could go, but in most of those places, tolerance was bought by, you know, double price for your beer or for your whiskey. Also, the cops would go there and the patrons would have to fork out money to be left alone. And I can't remember the name of the department, but it's something to the effect of, you know, the Department of Morality or something like that. They actually had these kind of divisions and arrested them for being immoral, basically for dancing together. But Bellotti Sr. did all of this for his patrons. In other words, he paid police to stay away and leave them alone. So they didn't have to fear that when they were downstairs in the casino. And he also never overcharged or gouged anybody. He just kind of ran the place. And then his son, Joe Bellotti Jr., who took it over, I believe, in 1960, was the same.
Do you recall any specifics about any specific stories about any of the photos or things on the wall that jumped out to you?
Sure.
That you remember?
There's a photo of a man, probably, I would say, in his 30s, really good looking guy, who has a normal, very kind of business haircut, and this was in the 80s, and he pointed this picture out to us. The man was wearing a dress and had his legs crossed and was sitting back in his chair, and he said that he was an airline pilot. And every time they would fly into Seattle, he would, you know, had a layover in Seattle. That's where he would spend his time. And that's how he would spend his time, in drag. The guy had a wife and kids, apparently. And to me, the significance of that, it kind of told the whole story of this place, that since the 1930s, the people that went there, the gay community, didn't have to hide who they were in a time when you still had to. And if you think about this particular patron's kind of situation, for all intents and purposes, his public life was meant to fashion himself around who they wanted him to be, right? Who the airline wanted him to be and so forth. But in private, you know, he could be himself when he went to Seattle and he went to the Doubleheader.
You also mentioned earlier, you used the word acceptance when talking about Bellotti Sr. and his patrons. And I feel like that's a different word than, say, tolerance.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Tolerance means that you are willing to accept something that you don't agree with. And typically, that acceptance is bought, as I mentioned, by gouging the customer, you know, higher prices for drinks or paying somebody off. That's how that tolerance was created. The acceptance that Bilotti has is he didn't care. I don't think he went out of his way to make this a gay bar. He just accepted people. You know, I don't care if you're straight, if you're gay, whatever. You are welcome in this place and you'll be protected in this place because you're my customer. I can imagine that was his attitude at the very beginning. And I can imagine a small crowd, maybe just one or two members of the gay community going there, kind of testing the waters, realizing that he had this attitude and then telling others about it. And so through word of mouth, others started coming. And before long, yeah, it was known as a place where gay people could go and be comfortable and relax. Nobody's gonna mess with them because of Bilotti's just acceptance for who people were, which I think is a much better way to live life than tolerating people.
How did you find out the doubleheader had closed, and what did you think about that?
I have a Google alert for, you know, for bars and saloons and historic bars and saloons and so forth. Nothing hit my radar about this place closing. And so I started looking into it and searching for it, and I found a single blog post. So my feeling was it was disappointment, absolute disappointment that this place closed down, because it had such a great story to tell. It had such a great history to tell. And the other feeling was a bit of shock that nobody seemed to notice or nobody seemed to care that this place just kind of went away. Doubleheader didn't celebrate itself. There was no sticker on the door that said oldest gay bar in America. Nothing like that. The people that knew about it were the people that went there. And to them, it was a place to go and have a quiet drink. And the people that were making that history, the people from the 30s to the 60s, 70s, they were still in the midst of that, right? They were still in the midst of this changing environment for the gay community. And so it might have been a little bit taken for granted that this place was there. And then the next day it wasn't.
Are you surprised when you see places, you know, that you've gone to close a couple years later, and, you know, because, especially when they have some sort of significance or historical significance to its neighborhood? I imagine this isn't the first time something like this has happened where you've seen something with some significance go away. And I think it's probably a little more common than you might like.
Yeah, it's very common, unfortunately. And when this happens, because I've been there and I know the story and the history, I know what's suddenly lost, right? It's not something that you can ever get back, that the sense of the history and the meaning to a neighborhood. It makes me feel like we're losing touch of who we are. So much of our story was built on what happened in these places, from the labor movement and the formation of unions to so many other things. And these places aren't museums. And to me, that's really significant. If you go to a place like Mount Vernon and you look at where Washington stood or where he slept and so forth, you're doing it all from behind velvet ropes, and you're not allowed into these places. You know, you can look into them, peer into them, but that's about it. Versus a place where George Washington really did go to, that was a public house. And it's every bit as historical as many other places that are roped off. And in a community, when a small neighborhood bar closes, what you're losing is the story of every person in that community that came before the people who live there now. And to me, that's really sad, because these voices aren't going to be back.
Clint Lanier is a professor of English at New Mexico State University, and he co-wrote the book Bucket List Bars: Historic Saloons, Pubs, and Dives of America. He spoke with sound effect producer Kevin Kniestad.